The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show as I speak. It's Thursday, October 14th. Man, the days are flying fast. A headline that just broke in the Sun-Times on the internet. Lightfoot spars with Hispanic caucus over hiring record. And this headline is really apropos to the conversation I'm about to have with a good friend of the show, who a distinguished guest, and as I do with all bonus show distinguished guests, I ask them to introduce themselves. So, distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. This is Carlos Ramirez Rosa, and I have the great pleasure of serving as alderman of Chicago's 35th Ward.
Yes, and he also has the great pleasure of coming on my show at least once every 6 weeks. And as I was telling Carlos before the show, he's kind of one of these guys. We could talk local politics, we could talk national politics, but we're going to do a lot of local politics, and we'll get to some national at the end, Carlos. So this is burning on my mind. I got to tell you, I wasn't unaware of this, what went down at this caucus meeting, until Jeanette Taylor, JT, Alderwoman Jeanette Taylor, was on the show earlier today, and she said, "Did you hear what Lori Lightfoot said at this caucus meeting?" And I said, "No, I hadn't heard it. I actually had not heard it." And she goes, "She said she's the best mayor Chicago's ever had, even better than Harold Washington." And Carlos Ramirez Rosa, my mouth literally, I could talk. You know this. I have the ability to talk. I'm never at a loss for words. I got the gift of gab. I was speechless. Because to me, and this is just me as an old baby boomer speaking, the greatest mayor the city of Chicago has ever had is Harold Washington on so many levels, on so many fronts, including at the top of the list, I would put, or not at the top of the list, but in the top five, what he did to build independent Hispanic politics in this city. So why don't you be our reporter and explain what went down at the Hispanic caucus meeting when Lori Lightfoot said that. Take it away, Carlos.
Well, you know, for the record, I just want to make it clear to the mayor's people that are listening, I was not the individual that went and told the press about what happened behind those closed doors. After the story broke, I did get a phone call from Fran Spielman. And given that the story had already broken, I felt that it was okay for me to now speak publicly about what happened behind closed doors on Tuesday. The mayor reached out to the Latino caucus and said that she wanted to meet with us to talk about her 2022 budget and to speak about some priorities that we had identified for her via letter. And we sat down and, you know, we started getting into, you know, what were our priorities for the budget. And just immediately off the bat, extremely combative, very uninterested in hearing anything that we had to say, not accepting any of the very light diplomatic professional criticism that some of my colleagues offered. Just very much, you know, I'm the best. Everything that I do is great. My record is irreproachable. And if anyone says otherwise, you know, they're full of S-H-I-T. Can I swear?
Yes, absolutely. I don't remember. You should have heard Jeanette Taylor earlier.
But yeah. But, you know, I was just super shocked about, you know, the way in which the mayor went about this. You know, the Latino caucus has many, you know, mayoral allies, many aldermen that have voted with her many times, that, you know, have carried a lot of water for her. And, you know, the folks that were speaking were folks that, you know, are generally voting alongside the mayor more than they're not. And so for her to, you know, yell at them, treat them in that way, you know, I've seen the mayor act in this way in the past. Certainly, you know, we've heard that, you know, in her office, she's treated people that way that work for her. And that as a result of that, she's had, you know, issues keeping some, you know, talent in her office or recruiting new talent to her office. But I think I was just really shocked by some of the things that she said, particularly, you know, as it relates to, you know, her record investing in the Black community and in historically disenfranchised communities.
What? Okay, so before we get to the Harold Washington part, which really irritated this old baby boomer, let's talk about perhaps more significant, her investment in low-income communities that really are starving for that kind of investment. What did she say about her record?
Well, you know, what I'll say is that we brought up as the Latino caucus the 2022 budget, and one of my colleagues, it was misreported in the Sun-Times, I did bring this to the attention of Frank Spielman, but one of my colleagues, Alderwoman Silvana Tavares, asked if the guaranteed basic income, right, which is a pilot program that was first suggested by Gil Villegas that would provide poor and working class families in the city of Chicago with a check every single month to supplement their income, to help them make ends meet. You know, my colleague asked if that could be taken out of the budget, if it could be a separate standalone vote, given that, you know, it's facing some opposition. And the mayor just said, absolutely not. That's staying in the budget. It's really important to me that that stay in the budget. I'm not going to entertain a separate vote on that matter outside of the city budget. And, you know, then the mayor started talking about how the Black caucus viewed the guaranteed basic income, in her words, because I haven't been able to verify this with the Black caucus, but she said that there were Black aldermen that were criticizing her for implementing this program in her 2022 budget without also including reparations. And essentially that, you know, the Black caucus viewed this guaranteed basic income pilot program as a handout to Latinos, and that she rejected that totally. And that, you know, she also rejects the notion that she has to do something on reparations. And that's when she said that she's given a fuck ton of funding to the Black community, in her words. And I think that for me was just really shocking. You know, my colleague, Alderwoman Rodriguez, wasn't there, but immediately I'm texting Rosanna and I'm just like, you're not going to believe this, right? The mayor just said that she's invested a fuck ton of money in the Black community and that she's not going to give them a cent more. And I think for me, it's just really wild to hear a mayor who ran on a commitment to equity, a mayor who ran stating that she understood the decades of disinvestment, the pain, the hurt that exists in this community, and the way in which that pain is manifesting itself, right? That she would work to address that inequity. For her to say, no, I've done enough and I don't need to do anything more, I think was really upsetting. I don't think that that's the right way to approach public policy issues. I think that there's a lot more that all of us need to do. And, you know, full disclosure, I support reparations for the descendants of American slaves. So, yeah, that was really shocking. And, yeah, I see your face right now, Ben. You're like, what the?
I'm like, you get folks, my face has been like that from the moment that Jeanette Taylor told me about this. First of all, let me just point out, Carlos is just going to be knows what I'm about to say because he's heard me say it a million times, and I've been saying it a million times, and apparently I'm going to have to say it a million more times until it gets to the heads of the people who run this city. The biggest economic development program that we have, the one program that's intended to bridge these social inequities that Carlos just alluded to, the one program that's intended to eradicate blight in low-income communities, the TIF program, is so freaking flawed that almost, I would say over 60% of the money goes to upscale, largely white communities. And if you compare how much money Brian Hopkins is getting for Lincoln Yards in the second ward, which is Carlos knows because it's not far from where he represents people in Logan Square, for a gentrifying community, for a project, $1.3 billion. Carlos, that's more money. One ward, one white ward, is getting then pretty much all the Black wards in the city of Chicago. And it's only the utter ignorance of the people of the city of Chicago that they put up with this. And enables the mayor to get away with saying something so preposterous as she should have said, I gave a fuck ton of money to Brian Hopkins Ward, because that's where most of the money is going. Brian Hopkins Ward. God damn. And it's only Carlos, because people are so clueless about how things go in the city of Chicago, that she gets away with it. And not just her, Ron before her. Ron would have one press. You got me going, Carlos. You're like, he'd give out like a nickel to some black business in Austin, have a press conference. The TV cameras would be there. Like, oh, the mayor is doing so much for black people. Meanwhile, $1.3 billion going to Lincoln Yards. Carlos, I had to go on that riff. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Your response. Go ahead.
No, that's exactly the response that type of statement warrants. I think that's an excellent point that you just made, which is that, you know, the mayor gave a fuck ton of money to Lincoln Yards, to big wealthy developers. And she continues to do so through the TIF program through today. And let's not forget, the mayor ran on a commitment to undo the Lincoln Yards project. She ran as a critic of that project. She said she was going to put a stop to it. And then immediately, she had not even been sworn in, and she did a complete 180. And I think that was the first indication that we had that this woman was not who she said she was in her ads, in her campaign speeches. It's very clear, I think, to most Chicagoans that have been paying attention to politics, that the mayor was coached. The mayor received talking points. She was willing to use those talking points about equity and social and economic justice and progressivism on the campaign trail to get into office. And since she's been in office, she's governed from the center right, if not the right. I mean, look at the anti-gang terrorism ordinance that she put forward, which is just a bunch of, you know, BS law and order posturing that we would expect from Donald Trump. So I think this notion that, you know, she believes that she's invested a quote unquote fuck ton in the black community is totally misinformed. I think the fact that you just pointed out, when you compare it to the other investments that City Hall has made, it is a paltry amount, you know, because she'll probably point to, you know, the Invest Southwest initiative. But, you know, the amount of money that has been, you know, funneled to the black community through the Invest Southwest initiative pales in comparison to the amount of money that has gone to Sterling Bay and other developers working on big mega developments on the north side and in already very luxurious upscale parts of the city.
And let's not forget, that was a great riff, by the way, and let's not forget the South Loop. Our good friend Byron Sixto Lopez didn't even want the money coming. He didn't even want it. And they put it through anyway. Now, Mayor Lightfoot, if she were here, she won't bend. Carlos, that was under Mayor Rahm. Yes, that was the final city council vote under Mayor Rahm. But you did not fight it. You did not resist it. You waved the white flag. And furthermore, after Misha Patel and her allies went to court to overturn the TIF, the Lincoln Yard TIF, you sent in city lawyers to fight them. And so just standing back, Carlos, and letting Misha Patel and her group fight that TIF deal on the north side, she sent in the lawyers to fight Misha Patel. So, and
yes,
I'm like, you can't have it two ways.
Since you brought up, Byron, when Byron was doing the bidding of his community and didn't want a new alcohol liquor establishment to open up in his ward, the city lawyers laid down and said, oh, we're going to, you know, go along with, you know, this licensee that's applying. I don't know if you saw that news story. But it just goes to show, right? When it's for one of her allies, when it's for a moneyed interest, the city lawyers go in and defend that moneyed interest. When it's one of her political opponents, right, who's standing up on behalf of his community and saying, no, we passed an ordinance to disallow future alcoholic establishments opening up in this stretch of Pilsen that has said they don't want any more to open up here. Then the city lawyers say, oh, no, we can't fight this case, right? We're going to settle. We're going to allow, in this interest, you know, this liquor license, you know, applicant to get their way. So I think it just shows kind of, this is not the light that we were promised. This is the same old petty machine politics that have run this city for decades. And it's what Chicagoans were fed up with. And it's what Chicagoans voted against in 2019.
Well, that this is a good point as any to mention. And I do not want to dwell too much on what went down over 30 years ago, but since Chicago seems determined never to learn from its mistakes and to perpetuate those mistakes, let me just say this. When Harold Washington was mayor of the city of Chicago, there were very few Hispanic aldermen. I'm trying to think if there were any. There was Miguel Santiago, who was the alderman, I want to say, of the 26th Ward on the northwest side of Chicago. He was an ally of Edward Dolak, et cetera, and so forth. And no, it wasn't the 26th, 31st, I want to say. Anyway, neither here nor there. But Harold Washington, his alliance with Chuy Garcia, Luis Gutierrez, Gloria Cheveret, Judge Figueroa, the list goes on, enabled them to get elected. Carlos, you know this history, because you're, even though you're young, you are a political geek, and you studied this stuff, and you know it. You know the history of Puerto Rican politics on the northwest side of Chicago. You know the role Harold Washington played in developing independent political politics, independent Puerto Rican politics, and built a Puerto Rican political sort of team. And then Dick Mell had to respond, and the machine had to respond by reaching out to people like Manny Torres. You get what I'm saying? So it started with Harold. So it's really weird that Lori, maybe she doesn't know this history, Carlos, on this particular issue, would choose to try to favorably compare herself to Harold. Your response?
Yeah, I mean, I think Harold was very much oriented from what I've read. Because as you noted, Ben, I wasn't there. I was born after Harold. I was born into a post-Harold Washington world. But Harold was very intentional from everything that I've read about building a Black-Brown coalition and about really making inroads with immigrant rights activists and truly a rainbow coalition, right? A coalition that brought together people from marginalized communities across the city, from the northwest side, from the north side, from the south side, from the southwest side, from the LGBTQ community, from the Jewish community. So Harold was really keen about building a strong coalition to move the city in a progressive direction. And when the city council and the Verdoliak 29 stood in his way, Harold Washington connected with activists on the northwest side, connected with activists on the southwest side, and they ran progressive independent candidates for those new majority Latino wards, the 26th Ward around Humboldt Park and the 22nd Ward around Pilsen and Little Village. And they elected Chuy Garcia and Luis Gutierrez to the city council. And those two Latino aldermen gave Harold Washington the majority that he needed to govern before he tragically died. So, you know, I think for me, it's if you look at the coalition that Mayor Lightfoot is building, it's not that coalition, right? Mayor Lightfoot, when she sits down with the Latino caucus and plays off of issues and contention that have historically existed between the Black community and the Latino community, and says, I've given a fuck ton to the Black community, right? She is feeding into the worst impulses that exist among some members of our community, right? She is not playing that role that Harold Washington played of bringing together people into coalition to push a progressive agenda in the face of right-wing conservative opposition. That's not what she's doing here, right? Instead, she's doing the exact opposite of what Harold Washington did. And so I think that at this point, it's pretty clear that, you know, Mayor Lightfoot is not a progressive, right? Just the list goes on and on and on of the things that she has done that actually have been very harmful to the progressive movement. You know, I'm very proud that in the Progressive Caucus and in the Democratic Socialist Caucus of the Chicago City Council, we have Black aldermen, we have Latino aldermen, we have white aldermen coming together to push a progressive agenda. And you know who our biggest impediment has been in the Chicago City Council? It's been Mayor Lightfoot making common cause with more conservative aldermen, in many instances, individuals like Nicholas Fasado, right? Perhaps one of the most right-wing aldermen that has ever sat in the Chicago City Council. So again, I think that, you know, the mayor has really tried to, you know, divide the city council and then kind of selectively chooses, you know, on this issue, I'm going to throw in my lot with the Nick Posados of the world and block the progressives. She's done that to us consistently on a number of housing issues. And then she'll come along and say, all right, on this issue, for example, with civilian oversight, she did ally with the progressives in the city council to pass something meaningful. But I think the number of instances and the number of times that she's allied herself with the progressives in the city council to bring together that Harold Washington coalition are very slim to none. It's just very disappointing because I think that Chicagoans were expecting something radically different when they cast their vote back in 2019. And I don't think that this is the administration that Chicagoans voted for.
Carlos, we've been talking a lot about this, the sort of squabble between Lori Lightfoot and Kim Fox. And I try to be as neutral as I can in this matter, but it just seems to me that I saw this headline in the Sun-Times the other day. It said, stop fighting Kim Fox and Lori Lightfoot. And I'm like, Kim Fox didn't start. I don't know why you're putting Kim Fox in this. I mean, Kim Fox didn't start this, you know? And so I just, like, sometimes we bend over backwards just to be so fair as reporters, you know. I'm not taking a side in this. It was Lori Lightfoot has obviously seen that pounding Kim Fox is a useful thing to do in certain communities, and pounding David Brown is a useful thing to do in certain communities. And then so she'll pound her and then back off. Well, I didn't really say that, and stop putting words in my mouth. And very bizarre behavior, and I'm not sure how it helps anybody in the city of Chicago. It doesn't help anyone. You raise the issue of...
It doesn't. And the mayor and Chief Brown have been sandbagging Kim Fox. The data does not back up the assertions that they've been making. The mayor's own deputy mayor for public safety, before she left, sent multiple emails to the administration saying, you've got to stop saying this shit, that it's the state's attorney's fault, because the data does not back it up. The only thing you have is an anecdote here and an anecdote there, but that actually doesn't build a case to change public policy. And so I think it's really upsetting that in this moment, when nationwide we've seen an increase in violent crime, Chicago has been no exception there. And unfortunately, we've seen a bigger increase here than in other parts of the country. And some neighborhoods have seen an even bigger increase than other neighborhoods. In this moment when people are increasingly saying, I'm afraid of walking out of my house, I'm afraid of staying in my car while it's idling because I'm afraid of being carjacked. In this moment when we've seen this increase in crime, rather than putting forward a robust public safety agenda in concert with your partners in the state's attorney's office, the mayor and our chief superintendent choose to instead engage in demagoguery. That's what it is. It's demagoguery. It's not a public safety solution. It's finger pointing. And I'm actually really proud that Kim Fox stood up and was like, this is nonsense, right? Like, they're there sandbagging her week after week after week. The woman didn't say anything for months, you know, and finally she said enough. And she stood up and she released the data and she talked about what's really happening in the city of Chicago. The reality is that 9 out of 10 people that the police bring to the state's attorney, they're getting prosecuted. And to the state's attorney's credit, because the main law that we have to defend is the U.S. Constitution, if the police bring her a suspect without enough evidence, she's not going to prosecute the case, right? That is exactly what a state's attorney should do. She's doing her job. Her department's doing their job. And I think it's also just, it's just really, really a big shame that in this moment, you know, I got to tell you another story, and I might get in trouble for telling you this story, but this is a really crazy story. And I think to me, it's just really emblematic of the way that this administration has approached governing and some of the deep-seated issues that exist in the city in this moment in time. My colleague, Alderwoman Rosana Rodriguez, has been hosting a series of community conversations about public safety. She brought in the Inspector General for Public Safety. She brought in the state's attorney. So she's been having these town hall meetings. The first meeting she had 300 people. I think she had a meeting last night. It had like 80 people. Do you know that the mayor got upset that Rosana had a town hall with the deputy inspector for public safety? Now tell me, the inspector general on public safety, they're the ones that are looking at CPD's books. They're the ones that are looking at CPD policy. They're investigating. If there's anyone that knows what's going on with the police department in the city of Chicago, it's the people whose job it is to investigate them. So the inspector general for public safety was invited out to this hearing that Rosana had in her community. The mayor apparently was so incensed that the inspector general would be invited to a public meeting on public safety. Rosana reaches out to the mayor's office and says, hey, I'd also like to invite, you know, Chief Brown to attend one of these meetings in my ward. 2 days later, after the mayor, after Rosana makes this request to the mayor's office, guess who shows up in Rosana's ward without telling Rosana, without telling the community that she was going to be there? Mayor Lightfoot. Mayor Lightfoot shows up with Police Superintendent Brown, does not tell the local alderman who has a request in you know, that the superintendent come and meet with her community and instead meets with a few remnants of the Mel machine. Tell me, that is not a real public safety strategy. Everyone needs to come together to work on public safety. You got to reach out to the local alderman and say, hey, I know that you've been having some issues with public safety. The superintendent is coming. Let's get together. Let's have a real community conversation. Let's focus together on real solutions. No, the mayor came there to play political games for a photo op, for a cheap political stunt. And who does she coordinate this cheap political stunt with but the remnants of the Mel machine in the 33rd Ward? Come on, this is some petty politics. And Ben, I know you got to say something right now, but in this moment in time when we have record carjackings, this is what the mayor's wasting her time on? This is what the mayor's wasting city resources on? Is petty machine political games? This has got to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, that when I saw that, that reminded me a lot of the games that Rahm Emanuel, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, play with Sue Sedlowski Garza when she was first elected alderman, barely got elected in the face of his opposition as alderman in the 10th Ward. He would invite her to certain functions that he would have in her ward, or he'd invite John Pope, who was the predecessor that Sue Sedlowski Garza defeated. And when I read about what the mayor did to Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez, I'm like, oh my God, this is right out of the Rahm playbook.
Yes.
And
but it's worse. It's worse because, you know, we didn't have record carjackings under Rahm, right? Maybe Rahm had the luxury to play some of those games. I'm sorry, Mayor, like, but you do not have the luxury to be playing these games. That you have time. And the deputy mayor for public safety was involved in coordinating this crap. This is what the deputy mayor of public safety is spending their time on, coordinating these cheap political stunts to mess with one of the few brown women in the Chicago City Council. This is so sad. And I remember it was Saturday, and I'm finding out that all this is happening, that the mayor orchestrated this political stunt. And I'm helping my mom deal with some stuff, and I'm helping her move some furniture. And I share this with my mom, and my mom says, oh my God, that is so ugly. And it is. It is just so ugly that in this moment in time when so many horrible things are happening in this world, that adults, that professionals who committed to bring in the light are spending their time doing this crap on the taxpayers' dime. I'm just, you can tell I'm really incensed by this. And you know, I get incensed by a lot of things, but this particularly, because I'm just like, but also, you know, I love Rosanna. So if you're messing with Rosanna, I gotta, you know.
Well, I love Rosanna too, yeah. And Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez defeated, just so people know, it was a very close election. She edged out Deb Mel, who's the incumbent, who is the daughter of Richard Mel, who's the powerhouse. I've already mentioned him once or twice in this particular conversation, but he was an ally of Edward Verdoliak and Ed Burke back in the city, council ward days, and the old Democratic powerhouse. And he decided he didn't want to be alderman anymore, so he literally handed it over to his daughter in the middle of this council session, and not in the literal meeting, but in the middle of his term, I should say. And then she was defeated by Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez. All right,
and he's out of retirement. You mentioned Vic Mel is out of retirement. He has started a community group called California Park Neighborhood Association, literally just materialized out of thin air. You know, with Dick Mel listed as a board member of the group, after some people pointed to that, they scrubbed the names off the website. They took his name off of there. But he's been using that group to spread misinformation about one development in the 33rd Ward. So he's clearly, you know, he wants his revenge. You know, Rosanna and the 33rd Ward working families, they, you know, they took out the Mel, machine, and they want their revenge now. And sure enough, the remnants of the Mel machine were there with the mayor for her photo op, which, by the way, 20 minutes after the mayor's photo op, there was a shooting where the mayor was. So it's just like, look, that's not a public safety plan, right? We literally had the police superintendent at that corner, and it did not prevent a shooting from happening, right? So again, it just shows that, you know, the mayor spending her time on these petty political fights rather than taking on the big issues that our city is facing.
So you talked about a more sensible approach to public safety. What would some of your suggestions to Mayor Lightfoot and David Brown be in terms of utilizing police?
Well, I think that first and foremost, we need to look at what has worked at reducing violence over the last several decades. There's decades of research. There is a lot of evidence-based solutions that have been implemented across the United States that are proven to reduce crime. One of the most important things that we could do at this moment in time is ensure that when people are in mental health crisis or when they're in another type of, you know, social crisis, that rather than sending a police officer, which many times may actually result in a fatal interaction, that instead you send mental health professionals that are trained to deal with that crisis. By sending those mental health professionals, you're going to be able to free up the police to actually investigate crimes, to actually work to solve the crimes that have already occurred. Because what we need to understand is that police do not prevent crime. Police come in after a crime has been committed to investigate that crime, to find out who was responsible, and to get that person and that individual into our criminal justice system, right? So this notion that police can prevent crime is totally misinformed. It's not backed up by the data. What actually helps to prevent crime are things like mental health first responders, like investing in housing, investing in education, investing in robust jobs programs, youth training programs, doing all the things that communities need in order to be safe. There's decades of research that show that investing in that social safety net is more effective at reducing crime than prisons or jails. And, you know, sometimes like the right wingers are like, oh, we want facts, not feelings. Well, those are the facts, right? You want to talk about facts, not feelings? The facts are that investing in housing, social services, mental health, education, jobs, job training programs are more effective investments. There's decades of research backing this up. They are more effective at reducing and preventing crime than more police and more jails. And as a matter of fact, there's also research that shows that jailing more people leads to more crime in the future. Because when you're locking kids up, when you're taking an 18 or 19-year-old and putting them in jail with seasoned criminals, what do you think happens when they get out of jail 4, 5, 10 years later? The only thing they know then is a life of crime. So it's almost guaranteed that you're going to continue to see this cycle of violence in our communities. So violence begets more violence. You know, historically, police have not played the role of preventing crime. They've played the role of policing poor and marginalized communities. That's a historical fact. Again, I'm sorry that the facts do not respect your feelings, right wingers, but these are the facts. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I've heard some anecdotes like, oh, there was someone that, you know, was let loose on an ankle bracelet, right? They were released from being detained in jail while they're waiting for their trial, and they went on to commit another crime, right? If that's happening, that's something where we need to be working with the state's attorneys and the court to figure out, you know, why is this person, you know, still out on an ankle bracelet? You know, perhaps, you know, they need to be detained if there's evidence that they've gone on to, you know, commit other crimes. But overall, when you look at a comprehensive report that was put out by a researcher and a professor at Loyola University, they found that the bail bond reforms that the Cook County, judicial system has put into effect has not led to an increase in crime, right? So again, the data does not back up what the mayor's been saying. So I think that, you know, there's a whole host of programs that the mayor could be looking at implementing, but there doesn't really seem to be an interest on her part to really implement those programs. And to this day, the mayor is still fighting progressive aldermen on a mental health first responder program.
All right, let's move away, close the conversation, Carlos, by moving away from local politics and get into national politics. I said at the outset I was going to ask you this question. I pretty much ask every guest who comes on the show these days this question because I certainly don't have an answer to it. And so maybe you have one, in which case I will then repeat it endlessly and not give you any credit for it and pretend like I came up with it. So, and here is the question. The question is, how can Joe Biden and the Democrats push through all the programs that they want and get it through the Senate with the recalcitrance, putting it mildly, of Manchin and Sinema? We've talked about this so many times, two Democratic, I have Democratic in quotes. I actually think Sinema is a Republican. She should really just switch parties, but whatever. So, yes, they vote, they label themselves as Democrats, which enabled Chuck Schumer to claim that he's the chief majority, the majority leader, the president of the Senate, and that make Democrats the chair of all the committees. But in reality, they don't vote like Democrats, and their opposition to virtually anything that Biden proposes kills it before it can be passed. So they don't even bring it to a vote. So your advice to Joe Biden and the National Democrats as to how they can deal with this situation.
You know, the Build Back Better agenda is overwhelmingly popular. It has huge support amongst Americans across demographics, across state lines. It includes so many of the important vital investments that we need for our families, particularly in this moment with this pandemic, with growing homelessness. You know, there's so many important investments in infrastructure and housing, in health, that the Build Back Better agenda will provide to the American people. It's not just good public policy, it's good politics. And if Democrats want to see their majorities grow in the upcoming midterm elections, if they want to see the well-being of the American people become stronger in the years and the decades to come, you've got to pass the Build Back Better agenda. It's the bare minimum of what you've got to do. And we got to remember that Bernie Sanders already compromised by trillions of dollars, right? Bernie Sanders and other progressives, the current bills that are before the Congress are the bills that were negotiated on by Democrats and that people agree to. And the only people that are holding up that have, in fact, this radical extreme agenda when it comes to the Democratic Party are Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. And it's so clear and so transparent that they are the ones that are carrying water for corporate America in this moment in time. I mean, Sinema left to Europe to a fundraiser in this moment. What is she doing? She's literally using the fact that she's a holdout on this vote, right? Carrying water for corporate interests to go around to luxury resorts and raise money from the rich and powerful. So I saw that at the end of September, about 2 weeks ago, Arizona Democrats threatened to hold a vote of no confidence. I saw some people in the left making fun of that. I actually think that that's an important first step, right? More people, particularly at the grassroots level in Arizona, need to be saying enough, enough with this bullshit. If they haven't already held the vote of no confidence, it looks like they haven't. The last thing I see is they mentioned this 2 weeks ago, that Arizona Democrats. But I think that's probably one of the first steps. I also saw that President Biden went and met with a Democratic congressman in Arizona. And there was some speculation, like, is, you know, Biden indicating that he'll support this congressman? I think that Biden should go and hold a rally in Arizona, an outdoor rally, bring people together and say, look, this is what the majority of your people want in Arizona, Senator. Right. And if you're going to stand in the way, then you're going to face the rebuke of the Arizona Democratic Party. You're going to face the rebuke of your president. And we're going to work to get you out of office. And, you know, we might not succeed today, but we're eventually going to succeed when you're up for reelection. So I think that that's a critically important step for the Democrats to take.
I'm with you on that one, that last point, and I will give you credit. I was just joking. Well, I'm not stealing your ideas, so I'll give you credit. But I think I've said this before, and I don't want the Democrats to start emulating Donald Trump, but that's sort of what Donald Trump would do. He would go on the offensive in the state. He would go to the state where the senator is that he objects to. And usually I would be siding with the senator that he's objecting to, even if it's a Republican. But I think you're right. At some point, you have to take a stand, and you have to ask yourself, what do we symbolize as Democrats? Why are we here? And if you can't pass a bill that would help people in this country, an infrastructure bill, or help people with their just their income needs, et cetera, and so forth.
Yeah, you know, in the American Revolutionary War, the Loyalists and the King's troops were using cannon, and they were using muskets and rifles and gunpowder. Did that mean that the American patriots, right, that the Revolutionary Army was like, oh, no, they use, you know, gunpowder. We can't use gunpowder because that makes us just like the enemy. No. I mean, rallies, rallying your base, getting your voters out, building that grassroots support, getting your message out. Those are things that work. And those are things that we should use. And we should use those tactics with pride and with gusto, because we have the moral authority and we're on the right side of history.
Well put. That's a good place to close it. Carlos, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for putting up with whatever technical difficulties we had. DJ Nate's going to do a masterful job of stitching this together, and this is going to be an interview that people will be listening to for a long time. So, Carlos Ramirez-Rosa, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right, very good. That's Carlos Ramirez Rosa. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.